Ba-dum-tish. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is 422. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are Guillaume Veillette.
Is this going to be a repeat of the Downer episode?
No, I don't think so. James Jones.
Radio Free Nintendo, your home for iPhone games.
And John Lindemann.
I am now being designed for mobile.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's a good... I mean, maybe your designer will get it right this time.
I hope so.
So everybody knows what's going down. I'm sure you've at least heard something about the news this week. And because of that, we are going to flip the script.
If not, we're going to ruin your night.
We're going to do listener mail first this week and follow that up with some new business later on, because we do have Codename Steam, Outrun, some other things that we definitely want to talk about in specific games. But we have to start off with some feature length discussion. And I put out the call on our Twitter account that people should probably send us emails about this news, because it's a good way to get on the show, because we're going to talk about it either way. And the one that we picked was, I think, the most concise and really laid it out here as a great starting point for us to discuss what the hell is going on with Nintendo this week out of nowhere. And this email comes from Paul. Paul writes, "I'm sure talking about the mobile reveal will be a major part of your next show. There's been some confusion I've seen online and some journalists making assumptions and jumping the gun, but Time
put out an excuse." Never happens.
Yeah.
Never.
there's actually a Japanese word for that construct. It's called Kotaku.
Let me finish reading the email, please, before we start the analysis. "But Time just put out an exclusive interview with Iwata, which has done really good clarifying information. As far as I'm concerned, it should be required reading before any panel discussion. It's at this address. We'll link to it in the show notes. And highly worth your time, I believe. Key points." This is Paul. Put out the key points for us. Just wrapped it up and put a bow on it. Key points. Number one, DNA is not directly related to the NX. Number two, Nintendo will be responsible for primary development of these games, while DNA will be responsible for service side. Number three, new membership service will debut this fall. Number four, Iwata will not use the freemium model in a way he believes could devalue Nintendo IP.
Never.
And Nintendo's main concern is to get as many people as possible to play, not necessarily profit per game. Number five, Miyamoto's primary focus will be on Wii U games at this time. Looking forward to your next show and hope this is of some help." Yes, Paul, thank you. It is of some help. It's a great place to straighten out the mess of news that that was revealed earlier this week, and get started on actually trying to parse this out and make some sense of it. Because, yes, there were a lot of, I think, misconceptions. And
oh, absolutely.
Not helped at all by the fact that Nintendo basically announced three different things at the same time.
Yeah.
Which
yes
are
and no, but I think
probably related. But I mean, at least one of them, and the to me the biggest one. I know
they're
the
all
one
related.
People are,
even
they're
if
all
they're
related
not related
to some degree. But can I just say the biggest news to me is the NX. Now it is also the part that we know the least about. Okay, so I don't know that we're going to spend the majority of our time here. I think we still know very little about it, but it is a new Nintendo system that will be revealed fully in 2016. We don't know if it's coming out in 2016.
Probably
not. We don't
know
if it's a handheld or a console or something else or some hybrid, or could be both, could be like a family of systems. We don't know, but we know it's a dedicated game system. And we already knew they were working on something like this.
Right.
Something of that ilk, but it has a code name now. It is the Nintendo NX, and we will hear more about it in 2016, maybe not before then. Well, we shall see. But that was offered as basically counter-programming to the news that Nintendo is going to be making mobile games starting this fall in 2015.
Yeah, and Nintendo themselves, which I didn't realize that. That actually, I found that out later.
Right, they're not
part
of
this article.
Right.
They will be
they're
the publisher of their
they
own games.
They are going to be making these games.
Yeah, because at first I thought it was, okay, well, you know, DNA is going to be making these, and Nintendo will just be planning, because the word planning was thrown around, which indicates, you know, Nintendo would write the game scenario and that kind of stuff, and then farm it off to somebody to
it
would be very similar to the way that they deal with Next Level and other developers like that.
Grezzo.
Exactly.
I mean, Nintendo didn't make Majora's Mask 3D in-house.
I mean, it could still very well be that. Nintendo still says they are responsible for those games that they have a outside developer making under their aegis. Like, they still regard those as internally made games, even though
they're not licensing them out. This isn't the Nintendo serial system.
Right.
These are Nintendo games. They can pick whoever they want to develop them, but they are the publisher of these games.
They take responsibility for that game. And there's plenty of smallish Japanese mobile video game studios that they could go to and say, hey, we want you to make a game. Here's kind of what we've got in mind. Go nuts.
But they're, well, You say go nuts, but I mean, Nintendo will heavily supervise that.
By go nuts, I mean follow these design directions exactly.
Yes. and we will flip the table on you as many times as we need to.
Please have Samus have the ability to change face.
in these interviews that, or the interview that Iwata did with Time, as well as the quotes from the investor meeting, he made it abundantly clear that Nintendo is not ceding authority over their IP. They are not going to allow a bunch of really bad games that will be valueless to be made with their characters. They are extremely careful about saying over and over again that they must protect their IP. It is the most valuable asset that they have, and that they don't want this to take away from their games that they're making on dedicated game systems,
and that
including
these aren't,
the NX, which isn't even out yet.
These aren't the same games either.
Yeah, the thing is with the NX is what stood out to me is that they just threw around the NX word, not really describing what it is, obviously, because it's very early, but they didn't really say anything about what's going to happen with their handheld gaming line.
Well, and they don't, this thing is, they say NX is dedicated game platform. They didn't say console. They said game platform. I mean, the NX could be a handheld. I mean, we don't know.
It absolutely could be a handheld. It could, but he went out of his way to say, I want to tell everybody that we're still making consoles. Never mind the fact that we just announced this thing that actually could supplant our entire game handheld gaming operations, but whatever.
But
I'm just saying,
he didn't say consoles. He said we're still making hardware.
You're dealing with some language stuff here too. But I mean, we don't know what the NX is. Like we've talked about the prospect of the mobile console stuff a million times. And he's talked about what is a platform, a unified platform. I mean, he's had these weird platform asides where he seems to be talking to no one but himself.
iOS is a platform.
Yeah, I mean, there's a back end part, but then there's hardware platforms and then software platforms on the back end. I mean,
right. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he's had these for about a year and some change now. He's been having these little soliloquies about what defines a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And the NX is obviously sort of the destination point for that mental thing that he's been doing. But except we know so little about the NX. They're not going to forego making a portable, dedicated video game system because that is where their money is made in Japan.
Well, compared to mobile, that remains to be seen.
But here's the thing. In mobile, there is a ton of competition right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but it
especially
really...
In Japan. Especially in Japan. In Japan, it is fucking impossible.
I get that, but the thing is, the upside is much lower on the actual...
They sold like 20 million copies of Pokemon Ruby and whatever fuck they call it.
But if you look at the
and
overall
not only
market
that,
numbers...
But they license out to third parties and they make money on the hardware and on accessories. I don't think that the potential upside for Nintendo on mobile is higher.
The mobile market is like 10 times the entire
market. Yeah, but you don't get
market.
Any money for third-party stuff on that. Not unless DNA
not
does.
That, but
well, yeah, but they're,
money...
but they're going to be making it, though. They're going to be making these games, so they're going to generate the money.
Well, they're also going to give 30% of it to Apple or Google.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be cuts, but I mean, but the fucking scale of the mobile market is so gargantuan.
No,
it requires a hell of a lot less
investment.
It is gargantuan
for about 5 games.
Yeah, but there's a hell of a lot less investment.
5 games is gargantuan.
There's so much
less
investment.
For everybody else, it is you make $0 every day.
This is going to be fun to edit.
Yeah. I'm just saying, man. Yeah. I'm just saying, the upside is massive.
But you know what the downside is? The downside is fucking bankruptcy.
Potentially, yes. These are the two extreme.
Ask Rovio because they're not going to exist in 18 months.
You don't know that.
Well, and you know, look, Nintendo is. This is not them jumping 2 feet in and selling everything so they can buy an RV and start roaming America. Okay, this is them hedging their bets. They are expanding their business. They want to keep doing things that they're currently doing, and they want this to be in addition. And in fact, I mean, and I'm not saying Nintendo's not going to sell games on mobile platforms. I'm not saying they're not trying to make money on those games, either from upfront sales or in-app purchases, whatever they may do. I'm sure, you know, I think Iwata says in the interview, he's open to whatever as long as it makes sense for that particular game. But he did kind of say, you know, I don't want people to feel like they're being taken advantage of. I want to protect parents whose young children might want to play these games. I don't want them to feel like they're going to get scammed, et cetera. But he also made the note, and this is really interesting, and I think this could send your mind off in directions of thinking about how this is done and how this ties into the DNA membership service thing. But he talks about using mobile. He said this before. He's talked about using the mobile games as a way to attract people to their to Nintendo's dedicated game systems and playing their premium games, their full price premium games.
And that's not the first time he's used this kind of, like, in the past when it's come up, like,
he's
how would you use mobile? Like,
still part of the plan.
So here's,
I'm very skeptical of that, but.
Well, yeah. I understand.
As you should be. You remember in the Wii days, they were going to bridge casual people into becoming hardcore game players. I don't really think that happened.
No. All right. From a business standpoint, so they're now the second biggest holder in this fairly massive mobile company that exists in Japan almost exclusively.
DNA.
Yeah. They are the second largest shareholder of that company now, which is kind of ridiculous. It just happened. They're like, hey, by the way, we're just going to buy 10% of your company. But one thing that DNA does, and my understanding is they operate a service that's called Mobitch. You download the service from a store, but then it itself becomes a store, which sort of helps you cut out the middleman, as it were, for other things.
So is it kind of like Steam?
I looked for this on my iPhone's app store.
Yeah, apparently it is like Steam.
Yeah,
I saw a bunch of games that were published by Mobidge.
Right. Well, Mobidge is also the name of the brand they do. So they may not operate the Mobidge thing outside of Japan.
I couldn't find it because I went looking for it. I was curious to see what it might have.
But they essentially, it's also like an API. So that's what they want the DNA partnership for. They want someone who can build not just, oh, they're going to build the accounts. They're building everything. They're building networks. They're going to be probably building the API for all the stuff. They're going to be building in the monetary element of it. And Nintendo is just going to make games on top of this, which that's what they already do. That's what DNA already does. They already license out their API to third parties to make games for their platform. So really, this is just them doing what they do. So they found a partner that is doing what they do on the hardware side, more or less in software, who's going to build them essentially their new software hardware, as it were. It's not super dissimilar from them creating a hardware platform, building up, the programming tools for it, and then licensing it out to third parties. Except it's all software. So for them, there is a certain degree of familiarity where they're going to be operating in. And, it does give them the opportunity to do things sort of like, to steal a line from Chris Kohler, they're not getting a little bit pregnant here. Like they're going for it, but they're going for it in a way that's not just like, yeah, we're going to make something and just code it together. Like they're laying out a plan for how they want to do this in a, repeatable process that this has been, this is a mature idea that they have been working on for a while. And of course, they announced NX as sort of the placation move, as we talked about. I mean, he even says in the Time interview explicitly, we announced it today because we want to make it clear that we're still in this – and then he keeps using the phrase premium game business. I sort of look at it kind of the same way I look at their quality of life division that they founded up, is that they are diversifying their company. Their company is incredibly monolithic right now in terms of what it does. It makes games for two systems. That is what Nintendo is right now. And that's a hard...
They also make toys.
Do they make the toys or does somebody else make it for them? I mean, they do Amiibos, but that's a relatively new thing. By and large, they licensed out their toy manufacturing to other people. This is... to me, I look at this as, okay... Nintendo is being a business right now. I would not be surprised at all if we see, other divisions of the company get announced. We keep hearing rumblings that they've been in licensing discussions with mm-hmm. their properties to make movies and TV shows. I wouldn't be surprised if they put together a, you know, a video to television/movie development studio inside the company. You know, they would, again, they would bring in a third party to make the thing, but they would be sort of running development in-house. They could make their own toy manufacturing, although toy manufacturing is a pretty tight margin in general, but Amiibo, in that interview, actually, Iwata discusses how he came up with the Amiibo idea, which I was surprised to hear that it was Iwata's own thing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of happy to hear, though, that came from him. Like, okay, he's still really involved beyond just being the businessman wearing a 3-piece suit and laughing occasionally.
Yep.
Like,
that's how he described in the timepiece.
Holding bananas.
Like, I've always enjoyed his 3-piece suits, but he only wears, like, 2 of them. As a fellow 3-piece suit wearer, I understand.
Like, I tell you, I'd never heard of DNA or Mobage before this morning.
I think it's Mobage. I think.
Well, maybe. Yeah,
I was just like,
a ton of sense.
I was just like, we're probably gonna sit here sounding like a bunch of fucking
like,
morons.
I knew I had DNA right, but yeah, Mobage. I don't know.
Yeah, Mobage. That makes because gay
it's
is like
it's mobile game. Yes, it would be the Japanese way of saying mobile game.
It's short for game, like Kusuge. All right. Well.
apropos.
That wasn't a joke, but actually I was going to mention some of the game titles that came up on the iTunes App Store when you search for Mobage or Mobage. Mm-hmm. I'm
Mobage.
Glad that they're not actually making the games for Nintendo, because listen to some of these titles. Motor World, Car Factory, mm-hmm. Blood Brothers, DOT Defender of Texel,
Goddess,
World of Wizards, Arcade Ball, Flick Fishing, Battle Quest, Rise of Heroes. I shit you not. That game is called Battle Quest, Rise of Heroes.
Well, yeah, because mobile games have fucking terrible names. Cupcake Carnival.
Yeah.
Go Ghost.
Fatal Frontier, Monster Grand Prix, World of Monsters.
Mm.
This sounds like stuff that would have Shadow Wars. This sounds like stuff that would be in a Super Bowl ad. It's so generic.
It is stuff that would be in a Super Bowl. It absolutely is. I mean, they have the they have the mobile version of that Marvel Mighty Heroes game.
Yes.
They have Goddess. They have Goddess.
Yeah, that's the first thing that came up was Goddess, as in G-O-D-U-S, as in the Peter Molyneux game of great controversy.
The Peter Molyneux disaster du jour.
Yeah, they're affiliated with that.
Cupcake Carnival. But unfortunately, this is what the mobile space is right now. And it, undeniably, this is what it is right now. I mean, you go back to I can't remember if it's a premium video or not, but there's a giant bomb video that came out after the Super Bowl where Drew Scanlon just plays every mobile game that was advertised during the Super Bowl. And guess what? they're all terrible. All of them. And they're all almost the exact same game.
Yeah, they're all pretty much the same thing. So, mm-hmm. you know, some of the headlines that we saw right off the bat were basically, you know, Apple is going to save Nintendo. That was the worst.
Fucking idiots!
I think that was on BGR News, and I was just like, I could not even believe that headline. But, you know, there is a possibility in the best possible outcome here. Maybe Nintendo saves mobile games. Maybe they actually bring something good to that space and make people like us, who maybe don't normally play those games, find something. I mean, Iwata keeps talking about we have to create new experiences. We have to innovate. We have to keep doing things that other people aren't doing, even in the mobile space. Maybe this is a chance. And it's not just, you know, as so many cynical people have said, and Pokemon Shuffle doesn't help the case, you know, that we're going to end up with Kirby Candy Crush or something like that, you know, where it's basically just existing lame mobile games that have Nintendo IPs slapped over them. Nobody wants that except asshole Nintendo investors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe Nintendo actually can create new kinds of games for mobile platforms.
Dreamfish Plus!
Well, I think
are much closer to what we like about Nintendo games in the first place.
I think they'll be much more willing to experiment than other. I mean, than something like, you know, like Gung Ho, for instance, where that's their bread and butter. They got to make money off of these games, so they will monetize the hell out of them.
Well, you
regardless,
say that,
they don't care.
But Gung Ho actually makes.
They make like
they actually have some decent mobile games. Like they're not the.
Yeah.
It's people like King.
Yeah.
Who are just. Like, if their building exploded and there's left a giant radioactive crater and everyone involved could never work in the industry again, it would be a net positive.
Yeah, I mean, but they have no fallback. is what I'm saying.
Right, exactly. If people finally get tired of their Candy Crush saga, King will go bankrupt.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, all they again, care about is pulling that money in from whatever Candy Crush, right. you know, sequel and, they
Bubble,
put out.
Bubble Witch Saga 7.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Nintendo's obviously in it for the money. That's obvious, but that is not their absolute be all end all motive necessarily.
Well, yeah, but I mean, nobody makes mobile games for the love of mobile games. Like that's the thing about mobile games that gets me is just that all of the games that come out feel like they were shit out by an algorithm, mm-hmm. and they kind of were. They were like there is a literal formula for what we refer to as whale hunting.
Yep.
And all of these games follow it, and it's so depressing because there is the potential that, hey, I have a device in my pocket that can play video games. Well, I already had one usually, but there one that can play games that maybe they won't suck. But mm-hmm. guess what? They almost always suck. Yeah,
so basically, because of Pokemon Shuffle, we're not sure that we believe them when they say they won't do that.
Oh, well, I mean, no, of course not. I mean, Pokemon Shuffle is an experiment. Rusty's Real Deal Baseball was an experiment. I think that was a much more elegant version of the experiment than what Pokemon yeah. Shuffle ends up being.
Yep. Certainly.
I begrudge them for making that game. I can't say I don't because there's a recording of me basically telling them to go fuck themselves. Mm-hmm. But. Like, I understand why they had to make it. Like, they had to make yeah. that game so they understood what that form of monetization looks like. And I will say, Pokemon Shuffle, for all its flaws, is one of the least egregious games of that particular description. You know, I beat that game without spending a single cent. And it's because it's fairly, I mean, it's 30 minutes per play. That's a long time, but in 2.5 hours, you can max out your play. So if you play it and you get about 15-ish minutes out of 5 plays, and the game with some regularity gives you essentially one of the gemstones. I ended the game with 4 spare gemstones that I could have used, and occasionally they'll do special events that are kind of interesting. So like they're kind of at the Puzz Draw level where it's like, okay, Puzz Draw's a better game, but like they're kind of getting you the same amount. There are much more egregious examples than what they did.
Yeah, but that kind of, if they were in the mobile space, that would make the game a failure, basically. There are tons. If you yeah. read Gamma Sutra, it's really depressing because you've got so many developers or asshole marketers writing blogs about how to monetize your game.
You should definitely not be reading Gamma Sutra. That's just a quick way to hate the video game industry.
I mean, in terms of creativity, Why would Nintendo make Pokemon Shuffle? I mean, I get it as an economic experiment, as a 3DS game.
That's the only reason I could think of you do it as an experiment. Because they could have made that game and not and monetized it in a more traditional way. They could have said this game was 10 bucks.
First off, regardless of the pricing scheme or how long, this is really just a matter of scale of how long it lets you play before it asks you to pay or how often it tries to get you to pay for something. Pokemon Shuffle, I don't think would do well on iOS. I think it doesn't stand out from all the other games that are exactly like it. It doesn't have anything to pull you in other than now you're doing Pokemon faces instead of other faces.
Kids love Pokemon.
What's the difference between Candy Crush Saga and Bubble Witch Saga? There's nothing. There's fucking nothing. One of them's candy, one of them's bubbles.
Well, but that's the thing though, right? I mean, if all of these games are all the same and they all play the same, what does Nintendo have? Recognizable
IP? Right.
They bring nothing to the table, and that's not where they want to be. They want to bring... Right. You can tell every single thing that Nintendo and Miyamoto say about this, I mean, excuse me, Iwata, is that we want to bring something to the table that only we can do. And that's, yes, obviously that's their characters and their IPs, but it's also, hey, we're good at making games and we think a lot of these companies making a bunch of money in mobile space right now are making bad games.
I agree. I don't think that'll apply across the board though. I think that they'll have their money makers, and then they'll have their experimental
absolutely.
Titles.
Right,
absolutely.
But John, you're also saying that, they've got Pokemon, they'll sell those games based on Pokemon, but the goal is to bring Pokemon, like to bring awareness about Pokemon to people. Like if you're not trying to attract Pokemon fans to a Match 3 game, you're trying to attract Match 3 fans to a Pokemon game.
Well, who says that those are mutually exclusive? I mean, you could do one and the other at the same time. I mean... Here's the thing. There is an insatiable market for Match 3 games. I can say that because we've been playing Match 3 games on like Game Boy for a billion years at this point. But
I really like Puzzle Quest.
But there is a physical limit to the number you can play, as a structure of time.
As it turned out, one was about enough for me.
Yeah. So I don't think that you could make Nintendo can and will make a match three game for this mobile environment. They just can't because it will do okay because mm-hmm. match three games are functionally incredibly simple to make. Mm-hmm. But to the point that Iwata is making, that's like they'll make those games because they have to essentially. But they need to make for them to be, this to be a successful diversification of their business plan. They need to do things that bring them attention because the problem that we talk about when we discuss mobile games is the ability to hit it one time and then try to ride it out and eventually you just can't. They can't do that. They're talking about making two games at a time, which. When you talk about a mobile game, that's not a huge amount of resource investment. Two games at a time isn't a big chunk of their company. Like, mm-hmm. it's a very tackleable problem for them. But those need to be two good games because as he talks about in the interview, digital products have essentially diminishing returns as they age. They become less and less valuable. So, they need to produce experiences that maintain their value as best they can, and you don't do that by making just a match three game that is essentially the same as every other match three game. You do that by creating something that feels different.
Yeah, well, you would create effectively a best of breed game of that type,
or you just create a new type.
Yeah,
you create a new breed. Yeah. You go out and you mix your two dogs, and you get a new dog. Mm-hmm. And you know maybe they will have some failures because it's inevitable, but their goal. Should be to produce stuff that's different from everybody else.
Yeah, I mean the one thing I think we can't overlook though here, like just as an aside, is one thing I think this will do for Nintendo, it will introduce their products to a lot of kids that probably otherwise wouldn't have.
That's true.
That's
part of the problem.
With parents handing off their iPad to their 7-year-old kid and saying here, or four or five-year-old.
Mario. Here's Mario.
Yeah, here's Mario. And the kid just sits there and bangs away at the iPad. But that kind of stuff, you know, that's kind of what Nintendo doesn't have right now.
Hey, my kid loves Mario. Let's buy him this Mario game. This real Mario game. Not this mobile Mario. Cause think about it this way. Think about how much shit there is for Minecraft for sale right now.
Yeah.
I bet you right now, if you go to your local toy store, there is a shelf devoted entirely to Minecraft merch.
Kids love Minecraft. It blows my mind.
Now imagine if they could get one quarter of that buzz going from a Nintendo game. Oh, but there's actually a whole system of Nintendo games we could sell you. Mm-hmm. Hey, look at this thing.
Here's my concern about this approach. I do think that's a big part of why Nintendo is kind of buckling to all the pressure and getting involved with mobile gaming. It's because they feel like they, like Disney, as we've spoken about for years, they get people in when they're very young and they try to get them interested in their properties throughout the lifetime, you know, up into adulthood, just like we are now. And Nintendo's really made this their MO and they've generally done a good job of it. But they see now that there is a generation of kids who have never picked up a Nintendo system because their parents don't play them anymore. Their parents are playing on these smartphones and tablets. And I read the other day someone saying, you know, my kid, my 1.5-year-old loves playing on my iPhone. They always want to play it. And you know, I just don't know if they're ever going to be interested in a dedicated handheld like 3DS. And I'm thinking, okay, your kids emulate the parents. The reason the kids want to play on the iPhones and the tablets is because the parents are spending all their time on iPhones and tablets. And that just as a general rule, across mainstream society, these devices become so ubiquitous. Everybody has them. They're around them all the time. People won't put them down when they're playing with their kids. And so the kids end up saying, hey, I want to do the thing that my parent is paying attention to instead of me. And so that's exactly why kids want these things. It's not because the interface is so much better for kids than buttons or joysticks are.
Well, maybe it is though,
but
for young kids.
That's not the main reason. Maybe it is easier for them to learn, but that's not the reason kids want to play on those devices. Okay? Because kids are terrible at touchscreens. I see that shit all the time. They're fucking terrible at touchscreens.
But that's the thing, though. Touchscreen games are so easy for kids to play. That's why they don't need to.
Because they're forgiving and sloppy. But the reason kids want to play on these devices because they see people playing on them. And my point is, if Nintendo thinks that putting their IPs on smartphones is a way to if they think that it's going to be easy for people to then bridge the gap and then say, oh, I like this character on my smartphone game. Now I want to play it on the 3DS system. No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be very hard for them to do because their big problem is that the parents aren't playing their systems around these kids because they're not buying them in the first place.
Yeah, but that's the thing though, with, you know, if they can play something on iPad, at least Nintendo now has a chance to make some money off of that whole transaction rather than them just never even looking at the 3DS at all and never playing it.
Yeah. It's, I feel like they're skimming, you know.
Yeah.
But if they think that going mobile is somehow going to extend or expand or strengthen their dedicated game system business,
it's not.
That seems like such a crazy pipe dream to me.
It is. I totally agree. It's a pipe dream.
And they keep saying that they talk like that is their intention. Do I think Nintendo could potentially have a successful mobile games business and in parallel run a successful dedicated, at least as successful as they have currently, you know, whatever modest, you know, measures you want to take for that, or even do better than they are now? Yeah, probably. They'd have to become a bigger company. They'd have to expand their development studios, and they'd have to get a lot smarter about doing certain things. But I don't really see these businesses as being all that connected. You know,
I don't see people
bridging these gaps very effectively unless, and this is the part that we haven't really talked about. And I think this should wrap up this discussion for now. Obviously, all this stuff we're going to be talking about for years to come. But the part that we haven't really addressed very much is this service, this membership service.
Right.
That DNA is going to develop for Nintendo launching this fall that will tie together what people do on Nintendo systems, including the NX, in some way, as well as on smart devices and PCs. Mm-hmm. And we don't have any further details than just what I just told you, but presumably this is the replacement for Club Nintendo. And it is a platform agnostic service, which is part of the reason Nintendo's going to DNA, because that's what they do basically, other than make games of questionable integrity and questionable value, because we're not really familiar with them. They certainly don't look that great on the surface, but they also, you know, they make these things that tie together. They have this MOBAGE type platform that syncs all this stuff together. It has been likened to a mobile version of Steam. That is probably one of the most appealing things to Nintendo, because this is something that they struggle with. And I thought it was promising that Nintendo is saying, look, everybody wants us to have this unified account system. They want for their Wii U games and their 3DS games to talk to each other and to be co-located on some cloud somewhere, so that we as a company understand all the things that they've bought, all the things that they're doing across multiple devices. And all this, you know, connects through the web, and then you have some way of tying in these mobile games that they're now going to be developing, and we want to make this part of the Nintendo infrastructure. In other words, we kind of want to put our mobile games on Nintendo Network and connect them to Miiverse and have ways of all these things talking to each other and feeding off of each other and tie that into some kind of loyalty program. And very quickly, you can see the complexity of this thing goes through the roof. And it's probably part of the reason that we haven't seen this already. So, you know, we still don't have any details about this service, but as far as we can tell, that is what we're talking about here, and DNA is going to be helping them make whatever that service is.
Right. And, you know, I had a little discussion with Twitter around lunchtime today, and one of the things that I just wanted to talk about real quick, one of the things I got a lot of feedback was people just super anxious, and I totally, totally get that. I think everybody here, I mean, to some degree, is somewhat anxious about what this all means. But, you know, I look at Nintendo as a big company. I mean, you may not think about it, but Nintendo at one point was one of the most valuable companies in Japan. They are a big company. They have a lot of people. They have the capacity to become a bigger company.
They also have the most valuation per employee.
Yes.
Of just about any company in the world.
Yes. They have a ton of cash, and they are sitting on a ton of stock that is their own stock. So there's not going to be, you know, people were worried like, what if this turns out really well? Then the investors force Iwata out. They can't. They don't have, Nintendo controls like 72% of the vote on the board. So the investors can just F right off. Ultimately, what it comes down to is Iwata and Nintendo have decided they want to have essentially another pillar of their company. And they announced one last year with the quality of life stuff. It hasn't really gone anywhere yet. They said it would be this year. They said it would be early this year, I thought. But, you know, we'll see. This is another one. They are recognizing that in the current state of the video game market, especially in Japan, which is where they base a lot of their decisions out of, that they need to be a more diverse company than they currently are. And I totally agree with that statement. Given right now they sort of have this superficial bubble because of, you know, exchange rate stuff, but they need to be a more diverse company.
Yeah, and also that they have to go outside their own house to actually gain expertise. Right. Which is good. I actually like seeing that.
They went and acquired a big chunk of a big player that grew very rapidly and tied themselves to them. That is a bold move by an executive to say that we are going to tie ourselves to this company because we trust them. It is my understanding from what I've read that they got a lot of suitors and this is the one they picked. So they obviously did their research and they said this is the one that has what we want. So I have every faith that they have planned out what they want this to do. And the vociferousness with which Iwata continually emphasizes that they still want to make, as he calls, these premium games. The people who run the company, that's where their heart is. And I believe him when he says it. So to me, this is Nintendo recognizing that to be a big company, you have to do a lot of things. Not a lot of things. You have to do a few things well. You can't just do
more
one thing.
More than one thing.
Right. Yeah. You can't be great at one thing. If they can
Which
be.
Which makes them already a lot smarter than a lot of the successful mobile games companies that you've talked about before. Because a lot of them are basically making like three versions of exactly the same game, and that's all that they have.
Yeah. Right. They are saying we want to be a three component company. Mm-hmm. But they've talked about the importance they're going to place on licensing. I suspect that will be its own division at some point. They've started to branch off into toy manufacture. They could get into that. Like I said, the profit margin on that's thin, but because it's a Nintendo thing, they could throw a premium on the license and basically say, hey, this toy is a little bit more expensive because it's Link.
Yeah, they can also justify stuff like Amiibo because it theoretically makes people buy more Nintendo games.
Right. But I mean,
they want things that are compatible with those toys.
They could step out from Amiibo and just say, we're going to make our own toys now, but we're going to charge a little bit extra because that is Link. It's not just generic, you know, green tunic guy with sword. So they could tack on a little bit extra margin on the stuff. I mean, they could start their own, you know, media production company. They will do some of this stuff because they are trying to add divisions to generate more revenue. It's not about which division produces the most revenue because this isn't Sony. They don't have a bunch of companies inside of a larger company. This is one company with now three revenue streams instead of one.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like Nintendo hasn't done this in the past either. I mean, throughout its long history, I mean, it's always hopped from one thing to another, you know, gotten out of businesses, gotten into businesses. So this is nothing new. So I think the whole, you know, oh, this is going to bankrupt Nintendo again, that's just idiotic.
Right. Or this is going to make them change what they do fundamentally in other places.
Exactly.
But I think it's important to note here, this is not necessarily about Nintendo hopping out of making game systems.
That's my point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it could lead to that. You know, and I think the danger is, and what Nintendo sees as the big danger here, is that the games market for the kinds of games that they're making, for the kinds of systems that they're making, appears to be shrinking. Mm-hmm. And it may shrink down to a sustainable level. My guess is that 3DS shows you about what the sustainable level probably is. Because if people were going to abandon Nintendo handhelds to only play something like...
New 3DS would have sold a bajillion units.
Well, it didn't sell a bajillion units. It sold a couple hundred thousand. Happy about that. Maybe
in Japan,
million,
it sold... It did a clean sell-through.
It did well. But my point being that at this point, if you're someone who would consider buying a new 3DS, you'll never give up on Nintendo handhelds.
Right.
Because you could have done it 5 years ago if that was going to happen to you. So they're probably at the install base for dedicated Nintendo handheld systems that is the minimum. And they could continue maybe forever just making more devices like that. Make it a little better. Keep making new games for it. They could probably continue to sell that. But for Nintendo, that's not enough. They don't, especially with the console business being as bad as it is for them right now, and in Japan,
it's bad for everybody in Japan right now.
It's extremely bad in Japan right now. Mm-hmm. And what they're looking at is, hey, we can still be successful selling handhelds, but if handheld is really our only major source of income, we're going to have to shrink as a company, and we're going to lose a lot of the historical gravity that we have in the world, in the culture, in the gaming industry, etc. If we end up only being a handheld game company, if that's all that Nintendo is in the long run, then that's not what – that doesn't fit with their vision.
That's not the company we want to be.
Their investors happy either.
Well, yeah.
I don't think Mr. Yamauchi would have been happy if Nintendo only made handheld.
No.
I mean, because he could have done that back in the Game Boy days or whatever. He could have said after N64, after GameCube, well, you know, clearly our handheld stuff is doing way better. Let's just stop making consoles.
Right, but they didn't.
Yeah.
To
his credit, he stuck with it. And he said, I think we can still keep doing things. And look what they did with Wii.
And like I said, maybe NX just nails it. Maybe NX is that, you know, that mythical device we've talked about where it can play some things away from home, but other things it can play everything when you're at home. I mean, they could do something. Like, the hybrid device makes a lot more sense for them now than it did 3 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And especially if it's if it's like feature limited when you're not there and they can still make the big games. I mean, if they talk about making a platform, a singular, you know, platform going forward. They may not have to grow that much because that does free up a lot of development resources. Not having to build two completely separate sets of middleware, having to build software for two, you know, things in tandem. You can build software that says, hey, this one you have to play it at home, or this one, hey, you can play anywhere you want. It frees them up quite a bit. They don't have to have dedicated dev team that knows how to do 3DS, one that knows how to do Wii U. Like,
and now a team that has to know how to build an iOS and how to build an Android.
Right, but again,
about potentially internal teams at Nintendo learn. Like, can you imagine them like cracking open books about how to code in iOS? It's completely possible today.
It totally is. But I mean, I don't know that they'd have to grow that much if their goal really is to be working on two or three games at a time. It's a totally eminently doable thing with, you know, three smallish sized dev teams.
Yeah, but then that's Nintendo existing as a small company. And they want to be a big company. I mean, you just said, you know, that there was a time in the not too distant past when Nintendo was the largest company in Japan.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
They were bigger than Sony. They were bigger than Toyota.
You don't need to have, well, they weren't bigger by people. They were bigger by monetary assessment.
They were bigger. They were more valuable. They were.
Right. But in terms of people, they were getting, nothing. Not even close.
Yeah. They're,
no.
Yeah.
But that's the advantage. I mean, they make something that can be replicated digitally or printed on extremely cheap. Disk material, so they can take the efforts of a small number of people. It's like Facebook, you know,
taking
the efforts of a small number of people and sell it to millions and millions and millions of people because the distribution cost is so low.
But that's what I'm saying, though. For their goal, for what Iwata's stated goal for what their mobile enterprise is going to look like for its scale, because he actually said its scale, which I thought was kind of an additional, like, no, seriously, we're still going to be making these big games. We're not doing a huge number at a time. We're not going to be trying to make like 37 of these things at one time. They could very easily buy two Japanese, you know, mobile game studios that this is what they do. They have this experience and just be done. Like, that's all they'd need to do to hit their target. And I mean, they've got a ton of money. Don't be surprised if they buy one or two of these things. There's a ton of them in Japan because this is what Japan's video game industry is right now.
All right. Well, let's wrap up this discussion. I want to say one final thing about NX, which is still a huge mystery, and we'll have lots of chances to speculate about what that is and what it might be, but just one final word about NX. NX is an integrated product design, engineering, and manufacturing solution that helps you deliver better products faster and more efficiently. Integrated CAD, CAM, CAE. Smarter decisions, better products.
Yeah, it's a shitty name. Yes.
It's not the name, is my point.
Well, yeah,
NX is a computer-aided drafting and design program suite made by Siemens. It is used in engineering firms. I know a lot of people who are very good at using NX, and there's no way in hell that Nintendo's next system is going to be on the shelf named NX, because
it'll be something much, much worse than that.
Probably. So it'll be like the Wii Mate. It's easy to say.
Yeah.
So are we ready to move on from playing our Project Cafes or what?
Yeah. Or our Revolutions. Yeah,
or our Dolphins.
It's just a code name. It's just a code name. Don't get
our Nitros.
Or Fusions.
Yeah.
Nitro's right.
Let's move on and talk about some other things. Believe it or not, there are other things going on. And
liar.
We have one more email for this segment. And John, could you read this?
John?
Well, you're catching me off guard here, Johnny. All right, let's see here.
Does
all
you mean
right.
Gianni?
Hendrick writes, I've come to realize that there are a wide range of opinions on spoilers. Opinions, okay. A wide range of opinions on spoilers in video games and in general. as far as what qualifies as a spoiler, some think that only plot points can really be spoiled, whereas others think that things like unlockable content, like characters in Smash Brothers, or even gameplay concepts should be guarded for those who want to enter a game fresh. There's also debate as to how long a game has been out before talking freely about it as fair game. Personally, in this day and age with so many classic games and movies available through services like Virtual Console and Netflix, I think people should avoid spoilers as much as possible. Other than a handful of times I've felt miffed, I think you guys do a good job with spoilers, but as people who talk about games publicly on a weekly basis, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts. Thanks.
So, like, Harris, do you guys care about spoilers at all, or?
I mean, you can find out anything about any game these days, so I think spoilers are on you.
Because Game Explain has already put 86,000 YouTube videos of your game out before it's come out.
There was this one instance that I was pretty pissed at IGN when they revealed the light suit for Samus in Metroid Prime Echoes. I don't think that Nintendo had announced that it would even be in the game. People kind of assumed because they had known about the dark suit. But IGN just plastered it on their front page, like the picture and everything. And like, here's the light suit that you didn't know was in the game. It looks cool, huh? And there are two ways that you can spoil something. One of them is, I don't know, if you're an asshole, and the other one might be accidental. Like, if you... I try not to disclose stuff that I've got great pleasure from finding out about, like, while playing the game. Like, when there's a nice discovery that I made, or when, like, something just blew my mind, I never saw it coming, and it was just the most awesome thing ever, of course, I'm going to try to avoid it. Like, there are ways to discuss games and to share your enthusiasm about something without actually saying what it is. If you can't do that, you probably shouldn't discuss entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're now in a world where everyone discusses entertainment all the time, and they have no training, and they don't really have put any thought into it whatsoever about what someone else might think about it. They just want to spit off about it.
Well, yeah, and what you consider a spoiler, like he talks about, may not be a spoiler for everyone.
Right. Like, no, I understand that. That would be the second
you
part.
Say about anything, someone could take it as a spoiler. So, you know, avoiding spoilers is the right language, because not giving out spoilers is impossible. Because what's a spoiler to someone else may not be a spoiler to me. And there is no limit to the amount of sensitivity that I would have to carry around to what other people may not want to hear, in order to actually avoid spoiling people on anything. It's just impossible. There's absolutely no way to do it. So if you don't like spoilers, which is a perfectly valid way to go about your life, if you want to avoid spoilers, but it is on you to do it. It is not anyone else's responsibility. Now, the only difference is the first thing that Guillaume mentioned, which is that if I know that you don't want to know something and I tell you anyway out of spite, that is unforgivable. Like, that is a dick move, and I know people do that, and that is really spoiling something.
Yeah.
In other words, you spoiled it because you know that it will spoil someone's experience if you tell them about this thing before they have a chance to learn for themselves. That is, spoiling is an aggressive, mean thing to do, and you should never do it. But divulging information that you don't know whether someone cares or not about it, that's not really spoiling. You see what I mean? Like, spoiling is an offensive thing to do. It means it's like, I can only spoil something for you if I already know that you don't want to know it, and I decide to tell it to you anyway for some negative reason, you know, for some vile purpose. And so you should never spoil anything, but things being thrown out all over the internet, you know, me talking about some game that I just played, I have to assume that the people who hear my voice want to learn this stuff, or maybe don't know that they want to, but maybe they'll be interested once they learn more about it, once they actually hear me discuss it. Because if they didn't, they probably wouldn't listen to this show, right? But if there's a particular thing that some person listening might be really upset about me hearing, you know, if that's not something that could be universally applied, I mean, a lot of people are more than happy to learn about Smash Brothers characters before the game comes out. Sure. They want to. It makes them more excited for that game. It increases, they want to know as much as they can because they're voracious about it.
Right.
And they're excited and they want to get ready and they want to talk about it with other people because it gives them a way to engage with it before the game can actually be played. So for them, that's not something that they want to avoid.
To that end, if Nintendo World Report happened to come across information that character whatever was had been in Smash Brothers before it was revealed, we have a certain, I mean, assuming we're not breaking some kind of confidence agreement that we had made, you know, like Nintendo mm-hmm. showed this to us ahead of time and said, hey, don't talk about it. Like, if we found this through journalistic means or, you know, Nintendo's
obligated to tell
right,
people.
Right. Like, it's our job to say something. So, yeah. Like, if Nintendo just fucked up and put something on their press FTP account, which they've done before, and we just happened to cross it, you know, we're required as part of, you know, from our standpoint to go, hey, we found this thing. Yeah. And
people said we spoiled the Nintendo DS logo.
Great.
Maybe to some really sad person out there in the world, that is something that they did not want to know about until they heard it from Nintendo themselves. But I don't care.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
as a reporter, that is my – if I find such information, it is my job to tell my audience about it. And, you know, for the only thing we can do is in the case of something like Smash Brothers characters where this has happened before. We hear from people. We know for a fact that there is a certain portion of our audience, a significant portion of our audience, who for whatever personal reason very specifically does not want to know that information ahead of the release. They want to know everything else that we can find about any other game, but specifically for Smash Brothers, they do not want to know about those secret characters because they think discovering those characters as they play through the game is an integral part of the experience. Then the only obligation that we have as people in the media, or even as just as fans who might be discussing this stuff on social media or on a forum, is that maybe you want to put a gate in between the announcement that you have the information and mm-hmm. the actual information,
yeah, but I mean,
so that you give people a chance to opt out. But
yeah,
realistically, you cannot do that in every circumstance that someone
yeah.
might.
Well,
not
and,
want
and
to
that
know
to that standpoint, there's the concept of the inverted pyramid when it comes to news coverage. And if you know character, if you let's say we had found out that Mewtwo DLC was coming at a time,
mm-hmm.
even if people didn't want us to spoil, let's say Mewtwo's in the game and it's not DLC, he's just been hidden, there's just been nowhere to get him. Like, if we found that out, like, yeah, to that point, you could say, hey, your headline could be, hidden character remains unlocked in Smash Brothers. But, I mean, from a headline standpoint, like, from proper, you know, journalism's, like, the headline had to be, Mewtwo is in the game. Like, mm-hmm. that's what the correct headline is. If you were to follow, you know, standard, this is how you write a news story sorts mm-hmm. of stuff. Like, if you were to go pull out the, elements of style, it would tell you that your headline should be Mewtwo is in the game.
Yeah, well, that might make sense. You know, using the inverted pyramid, as you say, I don't know that the average person knows what that means, but maybe they do. But, you know, it's just like the idea being that you should start with the most general information and then narrow it down into the most specific information as the article
proceeds. The big thrust of the story should be your first sentence, essentially.
Yes, the general sweep of it is that hey, Smash Brothers is getting a downloadable character.
I guess.
I think, and then which character that is could be a step down, but that really only makes sense in the old school AP newspaper world where your newspaper is the only source of information that a
right.
given person
because guess
has.
What? Guess what? People yep. are going to take that and they're going to go on Twitter and they're going to say, Nintendo World Report found that Mewtwo's already in the game. Oh my God.
So the distribution and dissemination of this kind of information down to the most detail that you can possibly imagine has been completely turned over and flipped inside out in the past decade or so. And, you know, I mean, if you hate spoilers, I hate to tell you, but you're living in the wrong world.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing
I
is,
mean,
you,
it sucks for you, but
I get it.
You can't control
turn
it.
Off
you, have,
the internet,
you have no control over it. So,
yeah, and I get that it sucks to feel helpless about things like that, but you kind of are helpless, you know. Like, I think it's just there's a lot of things that it's going to be almost impossible, and so maybe the best thing you can do is try to cope with it, and maybe try to focus on other aspects of these things that aren't You know, because I always say, like, with video games, like, I don't think there's anything you could tell me about any video game that would, like, ruin the surprise for me so much that I would no longer want to play it.
Unless David Cage made it.
No, but you might enjoy it a little bit less if you get that discovery.
Well, like, true,
but in terms of this podcast, yeah. I think that the format just helps minimize the chance that we're going to spoil something for people. I don't think we've gotten a lot of complaints about spoilers just in general.
Well, on occasion,
because, I mean, you know, the format is the new business where we're trying to tell people, you know, go play this game or don't go play this game for these reasons. And usually when we're trying to sell people in a game, we're going to try to avoid spoiling while at the same time trying to, you know, entice people like, hey, like, there's this really cool thing that happens. You have to see it for yourselves.
Well, our show is not primarily informational.
No.
It's primarily analytical.
It's barely informational.
Except in the case where we, you know, discuss the last night's, you know, Nintendo Direct or something.
But, right, but
you know,
mean,
just go watch a Nintendo Direct before you listen to us.
I mean, if we're going to start pushing things towards news announcements as spoilers, like, hey, guess what? There was, like 20 years ago, there was war in Bosnia. Like, I mean, like, I don't have to put spoilers around fucking news. I just, no.
Well,
just get out.
Actually, in sports, you do. I don't know if like, sports results are technically news, but you could argue that they are, and people do feel spoiled by that stuff.
Well, and but here's the thing,
also,
like,
people don't really, I don't think people earnestly complain when someone mentions the final score of a baseball game to them the next morning. They might say, oh man, I was hoping to avoid that today because I have it on tape and I haven't had a chance to watch it yet and I wanted to be surprised.
So
you can't really be angry
as the
at
resident
the
baseball fan
you,
on this podcast. I would never fucking watch a baseball game on tape.
Yeah, but people do.
They do. They do. I've had fans do that with hockey games.
Jimmy
like,
Fallon.
Dude, like, I don't want
to. No, we're not talking about Fever Pitch. You can talk about Summer Catch next? God damn it.
The only thing that you have to look out for when listening to this podcast really is
James
retroactive.
Jones.
And that, well, and James Jones, but also retroactive.
You want to talk,
because
John.
Then we're going
to
talk about, you know, in depth about these old games, and if
sure.
you haven't played them, it's probably a good idea to go play them
Sean
first.
Limit of the
or maybe
we give you weeks of advance notice.
Oh yeah,
yep.
Oh yeah,
and you have chapters and everything. So,
and there's also the fact that, you know, like, I'm kind of a buffer for spoilers. I have maybe edited out, you know, once or twice things. Like, usually we're pretty careful.
Yeah,
but
Guillaume never misses things get edited out of the show, does he?
Might have happened last week. Maybe I'm slipping, but usually I'm trying to be careful.
Once or twice in 3 years?
Slipping down the hard liquor, is that what you're telling us?
By the way, it has been about 3 years since Guillaume joined the show.
That's
cool.
Well, yeah, in May. And I like that James Jones is chiding me for, you know, an editing mishap for the podcast, for the episode where I just never got any kind of warning that there would be no now playing.
Hey, the person responsible for that is on the other side of this call.
Hey, I wrote now playing last week for the record. James and I were just...
I texted you at like 2 and I got a response at like 9.
Whatever, man. And I texted you and I didn't get a response. So we were just shifts passing
in
the night,
because it was nighttime where I was.
I'm just saying, I would like to be CC'd on these conversations.
On these text messages? Yo, you wouldn't.
John,
let me tell
John,
you explicitly,
I feel like you might think that. You shouldn't let that now playing script go to waste. I think you should find a way to get that out to the world.
Next time,
hey,
I will
what?
Just record it myself.
You know what we'll do right now? Guess what? Don reviewed some games, but 95% of them were terrible. There you go. I just did it.
No, actually, wow. Last week was reviews and previews.
Don previewed some games.
That's good material.
There's a bunch of them. I know. That was a script right there. It was so easy to write.
Anyway, maybe someone is thankful that we didn't spoil for them what content is on the website.
You know
so
what? I'm
going to
put a spoiler warning
themselves.
In front of Now Playing now. It's fine.
Oh.
If you still want to enjoy Nintendo World Report, don't listen to this segment, because this segment will make that utterly impossible.
Well, now we're just trolling.
If you want to enjoy yourself, just don't listen to this show at all.
I mean, if you want to enjoy yourself, I hope this isn't what you're listening to do it.
Yeah, certainly skip Now Playing. That's my advice.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So enjoy yourself and yeah, I guess that's our next retroactive. Enjoy your massage. There we go. We're good.
Okay.
You've gone and spoiled it, damn it, James.
Go
that was supposed
team.
To be a surprise.
I'm gonna go run my beauty farm. It's gonna be a good time.
Yeah. Sorry, I feel like we probably that was kind of a harsh message to
Kendrick.
To put out one point, if you have a plot stuff, like you should make an effort to not spoil it. Like like totally get that. Like, but the gameplay stuff, that's so hard when our job here is talk about gameplay. Like, when I get around to Codename Steam, I'm not gonna go sit here and just go like, hey, guess who the final boss of the game is? Although one media
also,
outlet,
like, who cares who the final boss of the game is?
One media outlet already did that.
Most of the stuff that people like talk about being spoiled is stuff that I would never want to talk about.
Yeah, but
anyway.
The narrative of the game matters to you, like them straight up going like, hey, here's the twist final boss. Here it is in the preview icon of this story. Like, that's kind of a dick move.
If the narrative of games matters to you, then I envy you because you probably enjoy video games a lot more than I do. I don't think most video games have a narrative that is worth giving a shit about. Maybe that's why I don't really think you could spoil me on a game in a way that would piss me off, because I just don't care. That's just not the part of video games I care about. But I'm trying to be sensitive to the fact that other people see it differently.
Well, good for you, Johnny. Just don't spoil Advanced Warfare for me, all right?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, if you have an email, if you have an angle on the Nintendo news, if you want to tell us that we're completely wrong about spoilers, please send an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We would really love to hear from everybody. And one other bit of business this week, this actually happened around the time that we posted the last episode, but it was after we recorded. We decided on the nominees for the new for the next retroactive poll, which we're going to be doing here fairly soon. We had so much fun with the last one, and there's, I think, a good opportunity for us to dig into a major Nintendo franchise that may be getting a new entry in 2015. Remains to be seen. So the next poll is going to be a face-off among Super Mario Sunshine, Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, and Metroid Prime 2 Echoes. No matter who wins, we win. Except
fuck you,
James. So I really am excited to see how this goes. You know, these are games that if we put them in a poll with anything else, they would probably win. So I like the idea of them facing off against each other, and I think they're all super interesting, flawed, overlooked in some ways games in their own major series. And they're all old enough and still, you know, fairly easy to access that I think it's a good time to go back to these games and look at them. They're also all games that originally came out before any of the four of us were on this podcast. So we've never really talked about these games in great detail. Of course, Twilight Princess did come out.
It's close. It's got to be close.
It's on the edge. I mean, it came out at the end of 2006, so it was in the era when Mike and Evan and Carl and Stan would have been talking about it.
Oh, back when it was two podcasts, one feed, all disasters.
Sort of. And I was probably on an episode around that time and said something about it, but certainly not in the modern format of RFN and not with this crew. And so I think it would be cool to go back and check out one of these games. It's too bad we can't do all three, but we're going to do one of them for sure.
What a shame. What a shame we can't do all three of these games.
So if you have a preference, if you're interested in participating, please go to the website, to NintendoWorldReport.com. There will be a link to vote in the article for this episode. We are trying a different, yet another voting method this time. We're looking for something that will suit the most possible people. This time we're using Google Forms. As long as you have a Google account of any kind, you can vote in there, and I think most people do. It's kind of popular website in the world ever. So I think you probably have a Google account. Find the password, log in, and vote on this poll. We would love to hear from everybody, and we will not lose any votes this time, I'm pretty sure. So that's going to run Well, we did last time, and it sucked, and I didn't want to repeat that. So this time the voting will end on April 1st, April 2nd, the Wednesday of that week, and we'll announce the results on our social media, on Twitter and Facebook, as soon as we can, and then on the recording of the podcast for that week. So we hope everyone will get a chance to participate, and we hope you're going to be interested in it, and we'll look forward to it. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up our listener mail segment, but don't go anywhere. This is not the end of the show. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got some new business. We're talking about some big new releases, mostly on 3DS. So stick around.
Now playing a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com.
And we're then we're not back. This is a different segment, isn't it? We don't do and we're back for this one. Why don't we get an and we're back? This is part of the show, unfortunately.
Oh, we're back this week.
We're back this week to ruin RFN. Although on this episode, as you've probably already heard, it's already been ruined. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go ahead and... actually, John, I this isn't in the script, and I understand it's not in the script, but I just want to go ahead and say that from this point forward, starting with our next episode, this is all going to be about the mobile space, because that's where Nintendo's going right now.
I'm totally down with it.
This is the match three of RFN, essentially, is what I'm saying.
Yep.
We only give you 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then you have to pay if you want 5 more minutes.
Yeah, we're working on ways to monetize this segment right now.
The site has content this week, and I didn't say that with that much surprise in my voice intentionally, but the site has content this week. First off, we have a review of Mario Party 10 for the Wii U by Neil Monahan, and I'm getting tired talking like this. Finally, you can play a game that's great with a group of friends, has plenty of online options, has tasteful amiibo integration, and shows that it had a lot of care put into its creation. Or you can play Mario Party 10. Neil shows us what it's like to try to avoid calling a game a steaming pile out of the goodness of one's heart. I'm out of breath. Jesus. Also this week, we have a review of Inazuma 11 Go, Chrono Stones. John, you made that up.
I'm not making this up, man, but this one's all yours.
That cannot be the title of that game. That cannot be the title of that game.
It's real, and it's fantastic.
I'm not even done. Inazuma 11 Go, Chrono Stones, Wildfire / Thunder Flash...
That's it.
I assume that's two games.
I guess, but I mean, it has enough words in the title to be five or six.
Wildfire / Thunderflash, mm-hmm. which was actually the name of my band in high school, by our lead singer, Don Koopman. Don
of
continues
course.
His inexorable march to the Kusagay Hall of Fame by reviewing a game with a name that's longer than the enjoyment you'll get out of Mario Party 10. Fortunately, the soccer RPG, in which you time travel with a stuffed bear... I'm not sure if John's trolling me.
I'm not. It's all
write
real.
Write us at RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com. Yep, it's from Japan. It's pretty darn good. And Don tells you why. Or John just made all this shit up and he's the new Dr. Seuss. We'll find out.
It's all real. All right, okay. And we also have a review of Ollie Ollie for Wii U.
2013's Ollie Ollie.
2013's Ollie Ollie by Mike Sklenz. This whole thing is a time warp. So we have
Perfect.
2013's Ollie Ollie for Wii U by Mike Sklenz, of all people. Striker Obi returns from the year 2000 with a review of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater for Nintendo 64. Oh, wait, it's 2015? And Mike Sklenz is reviewing a skateboarding game for our site? Then it must be Ollie Ollie, since it's the only one released for a Nintendo platform since the horrific Tony Hawk Shred. Yes, there was a sequel to Tony Hawk Ride in 2010.
I played that at E3. It was great. And by great, I mean I fell off and almost broke my skull.
So you and everybody else. It's an interesting factoid about Tony Hawk Shred. It only sold 3,000 copies worldwide in its opening week. Think about that. Find out if this game should skate or die.
With Tony Hawk Shred. I want to go ahead and say that actually the appearance of Striker Obi here gets us as our first appearance of this now being the mobile segment of the site.
Yep.
Yep, there we go.
He's our new mobile correspondent, Mike Sklenz. Just FYI. All right. And we also have another review of Elliot Quest for Wii U by Neil Ronahan. In what is surely not hyperbole, Neil stokes the fires of what I'm coining Rana Hype. By calling Elliot Quest a masterpiece, quote-unquote, and quote-unquote a masterful side-scrolling 2D game. Then again, I heard he said the same thing about Tested with Robots, so I take that with a grain of salt. Anyways, Niels tells you how this game will change your life and make you forget all about Mario.
For 25 cents a jump. Mm-hmm. All this and more masterfully executed masterpiece work is available to you on the Masterpiece Theater of Nintendo news sites, NintendoWorldReport.com.
And we are back with new business. I don't get to say that very much, but we are back for a second segment, and we are going to have new business now because there's games that we want to talk about, and I guess it falls to me. I thought I was going to be in a supporting role on this game, but I suppose it falls to me to talk about Codename Steam because I'm the only one who picked it up so far. Certainly not going to be the last. But I did pick up Codename Steam over the weekend. I've not played a whole lot of it. I'm barely past the end of the demo mission. Of course, the demo had two main levels or main sets of missions. One was basically the very beginning of the game where you have John Henry and, you know, you're racing through London. And then you skipped way ahead in the game where you had the Red Lion. What was his name? What's the lion's name?
Lionel,
yeah.
Lionel!
No. Yeah. No way. There's
just no way.
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah, anyway, that was, you know, way ahead. There was the female character. I don't remember who all of them were, but that's somewhere later in the game. So I'm now on the second mission, and so I haven't seen that much that I didn't already see in the demo. But I can mention a few things about Codename Steam so far. I am enjoying it. I would also say it is it seems hard. Even the first mission seems harder than the demo was. I don't know why that is, but maybe I'm trying to play it more deliberately because I'm trying to get all the gears, you know, because I know that those actually have more meaning now than they did in the demo. I'm also still learning things about the gameplay and the physics and the aiming and things like that that I think, you know, once I get over those roadblocks, the game will become a little less mysterious to me. I can give you an example. I was in a situation, I think you might remember this from the demo, there's a section of the first level where you're basically, there's kind of a hedge maze that you're going through, and there's a big fountain in the middle of the stage. And I was near the fountain, and there were some red exploding barrels near an enemy. And this is an enemy that is called a crasher. And when you kill the enemy, after you deal your damage to it and it dies, it then explodes, okay? Because it attacks you by running up to you and sacrificing itself and blowing up in your face. So you want to shoot it before it's close enough to do that. So I saw this enemy from far off, and I thought, okay, I could have gotten closer to him actually and shot him, but I wanted to stay far back enough so that I have enough steam left to do an Overwatch move, because that's kind of the more cautious, safer, smarter way to play the game. So I kind of held back and shot him from as far away as I could, and that left me standing near some red barrels, which normally I would not want to end my turn next to, but I knew he was the only enemy anywhere around. So if I kill him off, then nothing's going to be able to come and attack me before I could shoot it with Overwatch. So I figured it would be a reasonably safe place to stand in this particular case. So I couldn't, because of the angle that I was at, I couldn't shoot the enemy directly. But as I said, he was standing next to another set of red exploding barrels. So I shot the barrels and said, okay, that'll blow him up, and then there won't be any enemies anywhere near me, and I'll be safe and I can end the turn there. And if anything does show up, I'm in Overwatch, so I'm fine, right? So I was trying to be extremely cautious in this situation. I shoot the red barrels, which are a little bit farther away from me than the enemy is, which means that the explosion actually knocks the enemy back towards me, okay, which I wasn't really expecting. Because that enemy is a crasher, and I didn't understand the sequence of events, the enemy Spoilers. Gets knocked back and dies before it blows up. So the knockback from the barrel explosion knocks the enemy back to where he's within range of me. Then the enemy blows up and does damage to me, but he's also close enough to set off the red exploding barrels that I'm standing next to. So the combination explosion of these two things kills my character from full health down to zero.
Wow.
As you do.
So I learned a lot of important lessons about Codename Steam from that situation.
I mean, yeah, this sounds like one of those things in this kind of game where you go, well.
It's like there's a lot of chain reactions and a lot of not emergent gameplay, but just, you know, there's complicated interactions built into the way the characters move, the way that they have line of sight, the way that certain things happen when you kill enemies, and environmental hazards that are not really explained to you when you play the game, and you're just left to discover them. And that was definitely a moment of discovery for me.
For me, as somebody who plays these sorts of games, like discovering those things to me is part of the joy of these games. Like,
I was like, motherfucker, but then I kind of laughed about it.
Yeah, I mean, you get mad about it, but then you're like,
how could I thought I was being overly cautious, and instead I did the most dangerous thing I possibly could have done there. It's just because I didn't know how to play the game, and I learned something that I'll never do that again.
And the thing is, that's the kind of thing where later you could go, okay, can I use that to my advantage somehow?
Of course. Now that I know that when you shoot barrels, it does knockback to the enemies. That means you can displace enemies. And maybe if I could have sent that crasher enemy towards other enemies before he blows up, then he could have actually taken out other enemies for me.
Right.
So, yeah, you can totally use it to your advantage
if you know that
stuff's going to happen.
But if they were just to tell you, hey, that's going to happen, you would never remember it.
I don't know. I think that they could have done a tutorial where they showed you how some of these things work, but they don't. And maybe that's to the game's credit. You know, I don't mind discovering this stuff. It's just there's maybe more to the game than you might expect if you've only played the demo or if you've only seen a video of it.
Right.
So in a way, I'm kind of glad to see that. You know, there's some complicated stuff going on here. It is intelligent systems, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised. But this is not just a slowed down Gears of War. If that was anybody's concern, I don't think it was, but maybe.
I mean, my concern is always that it's going to be a scaled down Valkyria Chronicles.
Mm.
Without the, hey, just break the game by being a scout and running to the destination.
Yeah, well, maybe there is a way to break Codename Steam, but I'd be surprised. So a couple of other things I can say about it. This is my first time playing it on the new 3DS. I played the demo on my old system, and so I didn't have the C-Stick. And I think the C-Stick works really nicely in this game. It's very sensitive. It's you can move the camera around very quickly, very smoothly with the C-Stick, more so than, say, Majora's Mask. Yeah, I think the camera movement in Majora's Mask is a little bit slow. It's supposed to look kind of elegant, maybe, but it's not. It's not really built. It's built for you to create sort of more cinematic looking situations in Majora's Mask, or maybe just to pan over and kind of look at something from a different angle out of curiosity. But you know, that game wasn't originally designed with full camera control all the time, whereas that was something they added in Wind Waker, you know, a few years later. But Codename Steam is designed for this level of camera control for you to have it all the time. And so the C-Stick is just much more sensitive, much more responsive. It works really great. I'm very happy with it. This is a game where you're going to have to move the camera around a lot regardless. So whether you use the touch screen to do it on an old 3DS or whether you use the face buttons to do it, or you use the C-Stick, which is going to be my preference for sheer ergonomics most of the time, you're going to move the camera around a whole lot because Codename Steam is very much about you can shoot what you see, and if you can't see it, you can't shoot it. And that is the fog of war, you know. And there is no map. It is, you know, your information about the situation is limited to what is within range of your characters, which is one reason, you know, there's an advantage to spreading your characters out because then you have much more situational awareness. But maybe then they can't help you. You know, for instance, you very early in the second mission, you get a healing gun. You can't use that on another character if you're split up so far apart that you can't actually get to that character with your healing gun before they die. So there's a lot of pros and cons to the way that you kind of form up your teammates and the way that you use them to support each other. And I've still only got two people in my party, but it's very easy to imagine as you get, what is four the maximum? I think four is the maximum. And, I'm really excited to see how that all goes. And of course, there's more than four characters in the game, and I've already seen from the menu system that once you get past the first level, you can choose which people to take into the team with you. So in that way, it's very much like XCOM, actually. You have different characters with different specialties, different weapons that are available to them, and you can choose which ones of those that you want to form up your party and take into the mission. And that means there's just going to be a lot of options, a lot of flexibility in how you approach these missions. And the fact that, you know, pretty much every review says this game gets really hard later on, I'm sure that made you feel good, James, and it mostly made me feel good, actually, because I was a little concerned from the demo that it might be too easy. But I like the fact that it's going to get hard, and I like the fact that it's not like I have like a very limited set of things that I can do, and I just have to figure out like the exact right sequence to do them in. You know, in order to get through a very hard game. I don't really like games that do that. For me, there's nothing wrong with a game being really hard as long as I have a lot of different ways to kind of tackle the problem. And I can try a lot of different cool things and find my own way of getting through it. And it looks like Codename Steam is probably going to allow for that. A couple other things I can say. The alien movement, honestly, for me so far, has not been a big deal. And I can definitely see how it will bother some people. But it depends a lot on how you play your handheld games. For me, I'm almost always doing something else when I play a handheld game. There's exceptions, and a lot of times with stuff like Zelda, there may be certain moments where I really focus in on it, and I plug in my headphones, or I just turn off whatever else is going on, and I really pay attention during a boss battle, for instance. I don't really want to be watching a movie while I fight a boss battle in Majora's Mask. There's like only five of them in the game. But a lot of the time, you know, Codename Steam is a turn-based game. There's no timer. There's no reason that you can't just look up from the screen whenever you want because something else is going on. And so for me, the alien movement, which is when the enemy takes their turn and you may be watching with no input whatsoever for well over a minute, maybe 2 minutes, as this little blue bar fills up and the enemies one by one move around and try to attack you, or they go looking for you, or they run away if they're hurt, whatever. Watching what they do is not particularly interesting so far, I would say. And so sometimes it's pretty engaging, though, because if they're within sight of you and you're concerned about whether, I don't know if that enemy's going to be able to get close enough to attack me. Maybe he's going to wander in to my line of sight and my Overwatch character is going to shoot at him. That's exciting. And that part, you may want to watch that. I think it'd be nice if it was an option. But the stinky part is when you're on a big map, the enemies are far away from you, there's a lot of them, so their turn is going to take much longer when there's a lot of enemies because you haven't killed them yet. And when they're far away, you don't get like this god's eye view of what's going on over there. You still only see from your character's perspective. And if your character can't see those enemies, it's just going to look off in the general direction. And you'll see the camera kind of panning around slightly or tipping up and down as it shifts focus to different enemies, but you can't actually see them. So you're looking at a whole lot of nothing. It looks like something's happening over there, but you can't actually see any of it. It means nothing to you. And it takes a really long time. This is not a good situation for your video game. I mean, this is not something that you want the player to be spending large chunks of time looking at when there's really nothing to see. And I'm sure that there are hardware limitations or programming limitations or whatever, but I certainly am hoping for maybe a patch. You know, it seems like at least for new 3DS, there's probably a way for them to speed up the AI routines that are making those enemies move around and decide what to do. Maybe, I don't know if it's something they could apply to everybody, but it seems like for new 3DS, there might be a way to do that. Maybe the game doesn't sell enough for them to bother with it. Maybe it's too difficult. I don't know. Maybe they have no intentions. Maybe they think it breaks the artistic vision of Codename Steam and that alien movement is an inherent part of the game that you should never be able to skip or speed up. I don't know. But I have to say for me so far, it hasn't been that big of a deal. Mostly because when I'm playing Codename Steam, and I no longer have any agency over what's going on during the enemy's turn, I just look away. You know, I do something else. I unfocus my eyes and pay more attention to the podcast that I'm already listening to, or I pay more attention to the TV show that I'm watching, or I go back to my computer and keep working on my podcast edit or whatever. So to me, it's not that big of a deal, but I'm like an incessant multitasker with handheld games. So again, I kind of knew this going in. I'm really glad the reviews talked about it so much because it gave me something to think about. Ultimately, I decided, you know what? It's probably not going to be a big deal for the way I play these games because it's not unusual for me to like close the system and look up and do something else for a few minutes anyway. So for me, this almost gives me a break. It says, okay, now's a good time for you to go finish what you were doing before you start playing. So it's not that big of a deal for me, but for some people, I could see it being a huge deal. If you're the kind of person to get home and sit down on the couch or lay down on the bed and play your 3DS for 4 hours straight without doing anything else, and you've got your headphones plugged in the whole time and you're fully focused on that game, Alien Movement is going to drive you crazy because once it happens, there's nothing you can do, and it's usually not that interesting. So that sucks. I guess that's all I want to say about Codename Steam for now. Like I said, I'm still really early. I know James and Guillaume are interested in it, and so we will have other chances to talk about it. So stay tuned. The only other thing I will say for now for new business is that I beat Axiom Verge last weekend, and it's glorious all the way up to the end. I could not recommend it more highly or be more excited to continue playing it and for other people to play it.
I think there's kind of a conflict of interest here.
Disclosure is required.
Yes. Well, that's what I wanted to bring up. So I didn't know about this at the time.
Inverted pyramid, Johnny.
I'm burying the lead. No, but last week when I talked about it, I did not know that I am listed in the credits because the credits aren't accessible from the title screen. You only see them when you beat the game. Because I have a review code, I'm probably one of the first people to beat this game. And so no one had a chance to tell me about it. Certainly Tom Happ, the guy who made the game, did not warn me of this at all. So I beat the game and I'm looking at the credits. And a lot of times, especially with indie games, I will pay a lot of attention to the credits because I think it's cool to see people's names that you recognize. And I've been in the industry and I know enough people in the industry that a lot of times I see people's names who I've met before. And I just get like a little a charge out of that. I think it's exciting.
Or someone that you do podcasts with. I mean,
indeed.
Sure. You know,
I have sat through very long credits before looking for friends' names. And so it's not unusual for me to do it, but I'm sitting there looking at the credits for Axiom Verge and in the special thanks, my name pops up. And I like verbally said, oh my God, what is that doing there? Why the hell would I have met Tom Happ for all of about 5 minutes in my life. Mm-hmm. I have spoken very little to him. I've tweeted at him a couple of times. I don't think I merit being in the special thanks for Axiom Verge. I think it's kind of crazy that he would put me there. But I'm honored. I'm excited. I've never been in game credits before that I know of. I think I would know if it had happened. So here I am in literally one of my favorite games that I've ever played. I mean, I love Axiom Verge that much. I am so delighted with it from start to finish. And it's ridiculous that I'm in the credits for this game. But I'm and a lot of other people are too, of course. I mean, it's just the special thanks. But I was like, I saw my own name there in pixels, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I definitely did not know that was coming. And all I can say is that, I mentioned it on Twitter, and everybody's like, well, it must be from that joke you made when Reggie showed up at E3 last year. And I'm like, that's the only thing it could be, because that's like the only time I've ever met Tom Happ and talked to him was that thing that happened. So he must have really gotten a big kick out of that and must have been really happy that it happened if he put me in the special thanks. So thank you, Tom, if you ever listen to this. And
the check is in the mail.
Wait, who's sending the check, John?
I mean, they gave me a free copy of
not
the game.
Me.
So John's bribing us on behalf of other people's games.
There is no check. There is no check. But yeah,
because they spell it with a Q.
Johnny Money Hats Mets right there.
There's still a bunch of stuff I can't talk about with Axiom Verge, and a bunch of stuff I wouldn't want to say because, going back to our spoilers thing, I think
I thought spoilers don't matter. Just say it. Just say it right now.
I think this game is more fun.
Don't worry, Guillermo
when
edit
you
it
don't
out.
Know what's coming, because it is full of surprises. But I'm extremely pleased with it, and yeah,
Dr. Greenbacks,
you're gonna hear a lot more about this game, and not just from me, the rest of the year.
You're gonna hear a lot more from my friends Washington and Jackson about this game.
Anyway, let's move on.
I got my
to,
PhD in Skrilla.
Let's move on to James Jones.
Oh, yeah. I've got the new 3DS hotness as well. And by that, I mean I've got Quetzal's Corridors, which is neither new nor hotness.
Nope.
I have started this slow process of bleeding dry my Club Nintendo coins in the, you know, around 2000. So it's going to take some time. And it's a great place to pick up a game where you've just started a JRPG on your 3DS that's not codenamed Steam, and you don't really have enough time to play it, talk about it on a podcast you do weekly, and you've moved up your schedule by a day. Have
fun. Which one did you start?
I'm going to hold that one because the show won't recover if I go into that
topic.
Spoil
it, James. Just tell us the name of it.
No, it's we will not escape this segment alive if I go there.
Is it
pretty sure Conception 2 was on sale recently?
Is it was on
sale
recently.
I will say it was on sale recently. I'll say this: every Atlas game on 3DS is on sale right now. Pretty much.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is. I did get it out of the sale, because it's a day that ends in Y, so Atlas is having a sale on the eShop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyway, I got Quetzal's Corridors, which is like Tetris, where you're the Tetramino. I mean, that's
it is
what
not an Atlas JRPG.
It's that it's I know of.
The polar opposite of an Atlas JRPG.
I'm sure I talked about it on this podcast.
You have.
I remember. Yeah.
It's kind of a neat thing of like, wow, God, somebody could really do a good job with 3D on 3DS. Isn't that sad? Because, well, basically, you're playing a piece of a Mayan statuary and you're flying through holes. That's the game. I mean, you're turning your little L-shaped, you know, piece of statue and fitting it through various shaped holes. Like, you're kind of trying to slide a Tetramino through a Tetris, through space and Tetris port.
Right. And, like, the L shape becomes a three squares long shape when you flip it, like, one way. And then you can flip it another way, and then it becomes, like, just two.
It's 2D projections of a 3D object.
Effectively, right. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about the game, really, because effectively you use the face buttons to sort of rotate the piece, and then you use the D-pad or the circle pad to sort of move it around. You can use the shoulder buttons to kind of turn it counterclockwise and clockwise. But, and I'm 30, 40 minutes into the game, cleared about 10 stages. There are some stages that do a little bit something different. There's this one set of stages I just played through that, not during the show, obviously, that it's at the very, it'll show you like five sets of patterns you have to do in a row. Like, you'll go into an area where you'll have a choice. They might present you two or three different holes you have to pass through. You have to remember what the pattern was it showed you before to get to the end. Essentially, it's a maze. You do like three of those and then you clear the level, or you get sent back to the beginning if you screw it up. There's one where it was just a tower and it was just giving you one after another in really fast succession. You had to clear like 100 of them in a row before either your quick time, like you weren't fast enough or you ran out of time. So, I mean, there's nice little flips on, pun not intended, on this very, very simple gameplay style. And when Nintendo originally started talking about eShop games, this is always kind of what we envisioned, like little things like this where they take a real simple idea and blow it out into a medium-sized game. It's a fun use of 200 coins. Am I going to spend a lot more time with it? Probably not. Is it a great game? No, it's clever. It's got some clever ideas. It's got nice, you know, like the theming of just Mayan ruin is kind of a neat idea.
I never felt the urge to go back to it.
It just is. I mean, it's a very basic concept and it's just executed well. Like I said, the 3D effect, though, is actually really good. It's some of the best use of 3D I've seen on an eShop game. Like, just because you are essentially moving through a three-dimensional space through these holes, so there's this constant onrush of the wall you're about to run into. It's like playing Hole in the Wall, but not that god-awful Wii Hole in the Wall game. Or is that... I think there was a Kinect one, too. But regardless, I mean, it's, you know, if you've got 200 coins to spare and you like that kind of thing, I mean, knock yourself out. It's not great, but if you've got a billion coins, go nuts. Go nuts. So look forward to Harmo Night, where I tell you this exact same thing, only it's basically a rhythm game. Next time, I don't have enough time to play a game for RFN.
Me too.
But before May, whenever, when these things go expired. It's you have to register by the end of March, right? All your outstanding codes?
I think so.
I think it's the end of March. So if you've got any lying around, I've got a couple more. Go ahead and put them in. And you can get the Majora's Mask tote bag, but you'd never use in public because of Majora's Mask tote bag.
Oh, shout out to a friend of the show, Josh Hillier, who hooked me up with a couple of codes to push me over platinum.
Nice.
I'm set. And also, got me up to enough to download Harmonite, which I will talk about soon.
Also, the if you haven't been to the eShop in a while, or not eShop, the Club Nintendo in a while, remember that if you have a 3DS, you got the code for the – shoot, what was it? What's it called?
Flipnote
Studio 3D. So I'd forgotten about that, and it reminded me when I finally logged in after it hung for 4.5 years.
Well, also, if you're sitting on 2,000 coins like James here, also keep in mind that most games that you get through you, that you redeem coins for through Club Nintendo will end up with a survey a few days later.
So you can actually use rewards
to get other rewards, although you're not going to get probably that many coins off of most of these. But
no.
If you get Game & Wario...
Yeah, well, so if you're really out grubbing for coins, like, go look at discount bins. I may have picked up a copy of Ninja Gaiden, whatever, for pretty cheap.
Wait, the DS game?
At the suggestion of somebody else. No, the Wii U one.
Oh, the Wii U game.
Yeah.
I look forward to that day.
Somebody had suggested that you could get it dirt cheap at Walmart, and I was like, no. And I looked like, sure you can. And I was like, Walmart,
what are we talking?
Marty in the neighborhood.
$5?
Like six, seven, like six, not much. I don't remember. It wasn't Yikes. Wasn't much.
Well, let's move on and hear from John Lindemann.
All right, yeah. Just your money grubbing speech about Axiom Verge. I just have to kind of add on to that. to add on to that Super Metroid praise. I've been playing deeper into Ori and the Blind Forest, and that's a fantastic game. No spoilers, but there are. That game is difficult and challenging in ways that is fair, which is one of my favorite things. A game cool. where it's like, where if you don't execute something, it's on you, not necessarily, you know, it's not cheap. But then again, you know, I'm a Super Ghouls and Ghosts guy, so what do I know?
I'm a good game when you see it.
But yeah, you should definitely get it. It's really good. Like, I'm more impressed with it the deeper I get into it. So there's some parts of the game that I would describe as exhilarating, and I describe nothing in my life as exhilarating, John.
I'm not happy with you using the phrase exhilarating, to be honest.
Yeah, nothing in my life is exhilarating.
That worries me immensely.
So, to the topic at hand, 3D Outrun, got a copy of this.
Speaking of exhilarating.
Yeah, speaking of exhilarating. Yeah, so Outrun, this is, you know, from 1986, I believe. Very
wow.
old. Part of the 3D classics, along with, you know, Galaxy Force, Space Harrier. Yeah, this is one of the Yu Suzuki games where they were ruling the arcade roost. And this is
they were ruling.
And all of this uses the same engine, of course. I mean, you can play this game and it's very similar to Space Harrier, but I think it works probably better than most of the games using this engine, because it's a racing game, which is very much like Rad Racer. In fact, Rad Racer was kind of a ripoff of this game back in the day for the original NES.
I played Rad Racer, and this is way better than Rad Racer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Way
so
better.
yeah. Rad Racer was a cheeseball ripoff of Outrun. And
do you remember Rad Racer came with the 3D glasses?
Yes.
It had a mode that would, like, flash the screen red and blue, so you could wear those crappy, you know, super cheap, I forget what the term is, but the stereoscopic 3D glasses, and you had to put in a certain mode on the main menu in order to turn on the 3D display and make it work with those glasses. And
before the era of the seizure warning.
I guess. But the funny thing is, I mean, now Outrun is in 3D, and the 3D is light years beyond anything that Rad Racer could pull off on the NES.
Yep. And, you know, much like Space Harrier and those other games in the classic series, looks really, really good because these games are, you know, they're trying to kind of fake 3D by using, you know, 3D sprites coming straight at the screen. So, what was interesting, I hadn't played this game for a long, long, long time because, I mean, you don't see it around anymore. I would say, I mean, it's a classic game, but it's not classic enough that, you know, like, I mean, when we go to PAX East, I don't remember this ever being at PAX East.
Is there a, it was, like a home but not, console not the arcade version was. Of it?
Oh, there's a million home.
Oh yeah, there's a whole bunch
game.
Of them.
Hey,
like,
John,
for the
John,
Master
guess
System,
a...
Genesis, maybe.
Oh,
definitely,
no,
definitely for the Master System.
No, Johnny, there are a million. There's an Amstrad version. There's a ZX Spectrum. There's MSX versions.
Wow.
By the way, Johnny, guess who made the John, guess who made the Amstrad version? Come on.
Oh,
who's our favorite British publisher of video games?
Oh, it had to be Ocean?
No, come on.
Oh, US Gold. Who am I
US
kidding?
US Gold!
Ah, it's US Gold. Oh, our old friends, of course. It's beautiful.
I just asked because
brings a tear in my eye.
I had heard about Rem, but I had never played it before.
It was missing the music, but came with the cassette tape that had the music that you could play it.
you can't beat that.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Outrun, yeah. So I hadn't played this game for a long time, and you know, I mean, I remembered it, but not really in depth. So you know, you're a guy. It's just it's very much built on kind of, I would say, like 1980s California cool. You know, you're a guy in this what looks like to be a Ferrari-ish style of vehicle.
Yeah, it's very much in the style of like California games from the same period.
Very much, yeah. And you know, you have your girlfriend who, for some reason, just decided to come along apparently for this. Risky adventure and get thrown out of the car when you flip it when you hit something.
Remember, kids, don't wear your seatbelt. Blondes love it that way.
Yeah.
It's
so,
a racing
game
where you race with the top down. That should tell you a lot about Outrun.
Yep. And if you hit anything on the left or the right side, your car flips and spins in midair. And depending on how fast you were going, you either, you know, just kind of spin out or, you know, you flip in midair and you actually get tossed out.
And you get dumped because you weren't wearing your seatbelt.
Yep. So, yeah, so it's good. And, you know, what I'd forgotten about is the kind of the way you progress. It almost has kind of a Star Fox style tree system that you can go through. You know, you're trying to hit checkpoints. So, you know, before time runs out, you have to hit the next checkpoint and then it extends play. And I think there's, you have to hit, I think, 5 checkpoints to get to the very end. I haven't gotten to the very end in any of the various, trees yet. But I think, the cool thing is like, when you hit one of these checkpoints, just before the checkpoint, the road splits. So you can choose whether or not you want to go down one path, like the left path or the right path. And there, you know, depending on kind of what's around you, like what's on the side of the road, like sometimes there'll be rocks on the side of the road. Sometimes there'll be trees and kind of stuff like that. Depending on what's on the side of the road, it's, you know, harder or easier to avoid obstacles. And, you know, there's some paths that have, you know, probably the hardest thing in this game is S turns. Because what they'll do is they'll hide the horizon line on you, like make you go up a slight grade, so you can't really see what's coming, and then they'll throw you into an S curve, and so you have to go, you know, you have to go left sort of blindly, then right again, then left again, something like that. So,
well, that's kind of what they throw at you. That's a really important part that something like Rad Racer couldn't do, which is that there are really big hills and big dips in this game. Like it is. Not just a lot of left and right juking, you know, there were a lot of 3D, you know, fake 3D racing games in the 80s that had this, you know, going into the screen effect where they would make the track come down and gradually curve off to the left or right. But right. Outrun looks so much cooler because it does have actual vertical, inclines. And like you said, like you described, it actually factors into the gameplay and it makes certain sections, you know, more interesting, more difficult to get through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know, you have to go all the way to the end, and you know, how much you score and, you know, how well you do is determined, you know, mainly
by...
I
mean, you're already driving a Ferrari, John. You're scoring.
Yeah, you're doing all right. You're doing all right. In fact, I'm wondering why this guy is risking this Ferrari or Ferrari facsimile.
Yeah,
to avoid copyright.
Sorry.
You know.
Apparently he's outrunning something.
Yeah,
but
maybe he's just trying to run from himself.
I mean, why did Howard Hughes have to test his own airplanes, John?
You know, aren't we all?
I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes you succeed so hard,
mm-hmm.
you just need to take that
risk. You
gotta
set the world record. But I mean, yep. there it's not really a race against other cars, at least mm-hmm. not on the lower difficulties that I've been doing. And there doesn't appear to be anything chasing you except that the clock is running down. And as you get
yep.
to the end of each section, you pass a checkpoint and it adds more time to mm-hmm. your thing, which I think Rad Racer did basically the same.
I mean, that's sort of a standard for racing games. I mean, even games like San Francisco Rush, there are opponents, but really you're just racing those checkpoint times.
Yeah.
Yep. Stunt race effects.
This really reminded me of Cruisin' USA. I mean, it's more fun, honestly, than Cruisin' USA. And in some ways, it looks really good too. I think it actually, even though it came out 10 years earlier, I think in a lot of ways it compares favorably just in how convincing the effects are and, mm-hmm. But it is a lot like Cruisin' USA. It's just kind of better, I think.
Yeah. And, I mean, you are avoiding other cars as well. They throw that wrinkle in there. So, you know, and cars do change lanes as you come up on them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't just sleepwalk
it's
through the whole
like
thing.
It's like the assholes they are.
So if you just want to see the levels,
check your
John,
blind spot, assholes.
If you just want to see the levels, you can turn the difficulty all the way down in the start menu, and it removes all the cars from the track. So then the challenge is just don't drive off the edge of the road. And you can do that just by feathering the gas, you know.
Yep.
I don't even hit the brake, but just, hey, when there's a really sharp current turn coming up, just slow down, go from 180 miles per hour down to 130 and you'll get around that curve just fine.
Yeah. Now when you turn it all the way down, does it remove the low and high shifting?
No, you still have that. And the first time that I tried to play the game, I was doing fine. I wasn't running off the road or anything, but I only got through about one segment. It says game over. All of a sudden, the game just ends. Like, I didn't hit anything. I didn't die. No one passed me. I thought, what the heck just happened? I didn't even realize there was a timer. I mean, I knew mm-hmm. nothing about OutRun before going. Yeah. I knew that it had good music. That's all I knew.
Yep.
I knew that people liked it. But yeah, then I look down there and there's a low gear and a high gear. And basically just once your little tachometer it fills up, then you want to hit the R button to shift into high gear, and then you can basically leave it at high gear, at mm-hmm. least on the lower difficulty. There's no reason really to go back down to low.
Yep.
So it's simple.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned music. There are two new – this is great music. This is classic Sega music to me. There are two new tracks, actually. They have added two new tracks for this game. Using the same emulated hardware, which was really cool. So it sounds great, fits right in with the rest of the tracks. So it's really good. And they do have an old and new version of the game, and I've flipped between those. I couldn't really see much different aside from, I think in the old version, the backgrounds aren't as good as the new one.
Hmm.
Some of them aren't as detailed, and some of them are just more, you know, mountains in the background, whereas, you know, the new version throws in some better backgrounds. But I'm sure there's probably something.
Scrolling. Off in the back.
Oh yeah,
is there a way I can play this to live and learn?
I'm sure we could rig up something for you, JJ.
Probably,
because I got to live that way.
One other thing, John, that I noticed, or two things. First off, if you get all the way to the end of the course, you go through five segments and you set a high score, you can unlock tuning upgrades. I don't know if this is only in the new version or if this was in the original OutRun, which I never played. But the first one I got was cornering, and then I got a fender upgrade that makes me more resilient to bumping into things, I guess. And there's four slots, and you can selectively turn these on and off. And I don't know if they drive you to a different high score table or something like that. They probably do. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was kind of cool. And maybe I can unlock all these at an easy difficulty and then start to ramp up to a higher difficulty and use these to give me an edge and make me more competitive. I don't know. The other thing is, and you haven't seen this because you don't have a new 3DS, but I noticed this randomly today. It was just a coincidence. I had the game paused and I was eating lunch. And as I was looking over between the screen and my salad at my desk at work, I shifted my head and I noticed that the screen tracked the movement of my eyes perfectly. Not this new 3DS thing that a lot of people are now familiar with, which is where you move your head and then like a half second later you see it shift. This was a continuous, beautiful, smooth tracking. And what I actually, it wasn't just that the 3D effect itself was changing. the actual display on the screen, like the point at which the road disappears, like that point in the perspective where you can no longer tell the difference between the road and the horizon.
Mm-hmm. The vanishing point.
The vanishing point, exactly. There's a great movie called that. The vanishing point moves in real time as the camera on the new 3DS tracks your eyes. Because I think I think one reason the 3D effect looks so good in Outrun is that they're using the vanishing point as the focal point for the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they had to do any special programming for the new hardware, or maybe it's just that's just kind of how it works out because of the way that they use the 3D. But I found this fascinating. I mean, and if you have Outrun, you should try this. If you have the new 3DS, pause the game when you're out on the track and just move your head around a little bit, and you can move it pretty far before, and it's not jerky at all. It's completely smooth, and what you see on the screen actually is moving with the movement of your face. I've never seen anything quite like it. It reminds me of the head tracking stuff that we were seeing on YouTube with Wii remotes, you know, where people would attach the sensor bar to their head and they would put right. the Wii remote in front of the TV, and they would put together these crazy demos on the PC that would, you know, they would like move forward and backward, and you could see the thing on the TV like shifting with them as they moved around. It's a little bit like that. It's so cool.
Alternatively, if you don't have
fun trivia, if you do the new 3DS transfer, if you transfer your old 3DS to your new 3DS, look at the Pikmin screen in 3D with the face tracking, because it actually does that.
Oh, it does the same thing.
Alternatively, if you don't have a new 3DS, you could just wave that $300 in your face and get the same effect.
They're not $300.
Yeah. Well. On that depressing note, yeah, that's a great game. I'd highly recommend it to everybody. Yeah, 3D Outrun is really good. I think it's probably the best of the Sega classics, I would say. I think so. It's certainly, I mean, I love Space Harrier, but this is probably, it's probably more fun than Space Harrier. And Afterburner is just difficult. It's very hard.
It's Afterburner. It's a quarter destroying game.
It's a quarter destroying game. And also just, there's a lot of stuff where you're just like, what the hell? I can't even, it's much harder to gauge, it's much harder to gauge what's coming at you in Afterburner in terms of, is it going to hit me? Is it not going to hit me?
It's
very, very hard to tell.
It's going
to
hit
you. Yeah, it all hits you. FYI, it all hits you because it's really hard to dodge. Yeah, I mean, it's really good. It's really good. I think it probably will have more appeal to people that aren't just hardcore old school arcade Sega junkies like myself. So,
yeah, I've been really impressed and really pleased by it. And I had never ever touched Outrun before this. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend it as well. I'm excited to play more of it.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Well, Guillaume, you're up last.
Right. So, I finished Persona Q. And I just want to give some final thoughts.
The game does have an ending, apparently.
Yeah, the game does have an end. Although I could, right, I could replay it as, you know, on the other side. Like, I chose the Persona 4 side. I could play the Persona 3 side. But I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to give out, like, quick final thoughts in kind of bullet point form. but verbally. The plot of the game is not great. I think it's better. It's an improvement over your typical Etrian Odyssey game. But essentially, the story revolves around these two new characters that they made up for this game. And I saw their story through to the end. And I'm not really attached to those characters. I don't really care what happened to them. It was a very basic thing. Like, I guess the moral of the story is very much like, you know, about friendship and how your friends, you know, touch you and everything. It's very basic stuff. It's not that interesting.
So you're saying you're not going to buy the Dancing All Night DLC that features Ken and Ray in it, or Ray and Zan in it?
I know, especially since I don't have a Vita.
I don't know that exists, but it probably does now that I've said it.
And the character stuff, that's what's most interesting about the game. If you're a fan of Persona 3, Persona 4, you finally get to see the characters from both those games. Like, they've got different casts. If you haven't played Persona, they've got different casts, and it's fun to see them meet up and interact. But even then, I think there was a missed opportunity, because you don't see that many people interact with each other. Like, there's not that much crossover over who's talking to whom, who's bonding with whom, except maybe Kanji and Ken, like there's kind of this side story that happens like throughout the game, and that's pretty cool. They could have done more of that. They didn't. I think that's a missed opportunity.
Koro and Teddy. That's the other one they do a lot.
Yeah, but I don't care about Teddy.
One of them doesn't talk and the other one you wish would stop.
Exactly. He doesn't count because Teddy's awful. And he's way more horny in this game than I remember him being in Persona 4.
I just played Persona 4. He's pretty much on par for what he was.
Okay. So with new eyes, I look at Teddy and I wish he'd die. So I still enjoy the game. But I think, and it's funny, like I was thinking, like, why do I enjoy Etrian Odyssey so much? Why do I enjoy Persona Q? And I think it has to do with, like, I think it's basically for the same reasons that I enjoy something like Picross. I enjoy the map making, and Picross, you know, we call it a puzzle game. It's not really, you're not really solving anything, like, not through reasoning, not through really, like, figuring things out. It's mostly about observation. It's about dutifully noting down hints and stuff. And I think it's the same type of, like, it's kind of a calming exercise. You know, you don't have to think too hard about it. You just have to be careful. You just have to observe. You have to take down notes. And so for the same reason that I find Picross enjoyable and calming and fun, I enjoy map making in Persona Q and Etrian Odyssey. So that's like the minor revelation that I had this week. And yeah, so I finished Persona Q. I've moved on to playing Mario Golf. And Mario Golf World Tour, the 3DS one, the 3DS game. And so I picked this game up when it was on sale recently. I think that back when it came out, I tried to justify not getting it with some really stupid reasoning. I think I said, oh, I just picked up Mario Golf N64 on Club Nintendo, and a golf game is a golf game, and I'm probably going to enjoy it just as much, and World Tour is superfluous, and stuff like that. And in hindsight, I think I was just really balking at the price of the game. I wanted to play it, but I had also Kirby that came out at the same time, and I just, you know, I didn't really want to invest $40 in a new Mario Golf game.
Well, I mean, and the read on that game was that it had been content light. I mean, people were right. upset about the lack of content in that game.
Yeah, and there was DLC, so people, you know.
Right, they're like, oh, so you just shelled out for the DLC, huh?
Right. So I don't think that affected me much, but it was more the fact that I had something else to play and I had another golf game to play. But turns out I didn't really go back to Mario Golf 64 all that often. And this game is so much better. Like, of course it is. It's like a decade newer. More than that, yeah. And it looks great. The 3D effect, of course, on the new 3DS is amazing. It's eye-popping. It really adds to the game. And I really enjoy what they did with it. I enjoy the online stuff. I haven't played that much with it, but there are a lot of tournaments that Nintendo starts, like tournaments that are open to all, where you have basically, through various modes, like you've got speed golf, where you have to not think too long about your shots and just do it. There are you know, like the coin modes, the regular tournament modes, and you can just hop in and play and, you know, cross your fingers and hope that by the end of the tournament schedule, you're going to be, you know, one of the top few who will get some bonus stuff. I'm actually not sure what that bonus stuff is because I haven't, like, no tournament has closed yet since the time that I've started playing the game. But I find that, you know, just the fact that they've got these online tournaments means that they refresh constantly, means that the lightness of content is really not that much of an issue. You can just keep playing and playing and have these, Nintendo incentivize you to keep playing and to compete against people worldwide. And that kind of replaces anything else they could have done, right? But even in the single player, you've got, you know, the regular, the kind of the default unlock structure that a lot of sports games have. So even then, you're going to have to play a lot to unlock everything and to see everything that the game has to offer. One thing that I found really funny about the game is that there's no RPG mode, but there is some sort of like Castle Tour mode where you talk to various Nintendo characters as your Mii, and you you know, you compete in tournaments and you try to progress through the story, you know, as light as it is. You don't get experience points, but you do get coins with which you purchase new equipment. You can talk to various Nintendo characters, and what struck me as really funny is that you can talk to everyone, right? Like, you can talk to Peach, and she'll talk back at you, she'll congratulate you on being, like, the... Well, I mean, like, she'll congratulate you on being, like, this amazing golfer. You can talk to Diddy Kong or Yoshi, and you can see what they're telling you through, brackets, right? Like, they don't speak English, but the game translates them for you. And, you know, they're just like, hey, you're awesome. We're in a Nintendo game and we're all about positive reinforcement. But then you talk to Luigi and to Mario. They don't say a fucking thing. They just like gesticulate. They just gesticulate and will, you know, you'll hear Charles Martinet do one of his like, uh-huh, you know, and nothing else. And then you've got that Toad next to them, who will translate for you.
Oh,
Luigi is really impressed by your exploit. Luigi would like to say that you really showed some guts, like on the green there or something.
Toad is an etiquette droid.
Awesome.
Basically, and Luigi and Mario are the only two mute characters in the game.
Maybe they're both drunk, and Toad's just covering for him.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Like, I imagine that Camelot got, like, directives from Nintendo, like, here's what you can and can't do with our characters. And there must have been a thing, like, maybe all the check marks were, you know, next to, yes, Peach can speak, and Shy Guy can speak, and everything, and they left out Mario and Luigi, and Camelot was like, okay, what do we do?
Well, I mean, they said we can't use them, so...
Exactly, but it's
just
so weird.
Didn't say Toad can't speak on their behalf.
Right, like, I understand that Mario never really says
Toad
much.
Toad is worm time.
I understand that Mario being semi-mute is not a new thing. Like in Super Mario RPG, it was kind of a joke that he would just mimic right. whatever he wanted to say, and everyone else could talk and had to interpret him. Like he was being Lassie, basically, like, oh, what's that? Like, Luigi's down the well.
Right.
But that was different because silent protagonists in RPGs is a thing. It's a common thing, you know, and it felt like they were making fun of that. Here, you're playing as your Mii. You're talking to Mario. He's an NPC.
Maybe he's a dick. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe he just doesn't want to talk to you.
But it struck me as really funny, and I imagine there must have been like a whole pile of sheets, you know, like outlining all the things you can and can't do with Nintendo's IP.
Mario's a dick, now available for Apple, iPhone, and Android.
Mario has his own press secretary.
There's your episode title.
So yeah, but yeah, really fun game. Really, I'm enjoying it a lot, and I'm not sure if I'm going to look at the DLC. I still have a lot of content to go through before I even think about that. But great game. I'm really happy that I have it, and it's just a great way to spend, I don't know, like 20 minutes vegging out and just playing Mario Golf.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard from quite a few people. Some people are still talking about it, even who got it from the beginning, right when it first launched. I hear that
right.
There's some people who still play it. And it seems like, you know, there were a fair number of people on our staff, I know, who picked it up and played it for a couple weeks, and then they kind of lost interest. I sort of saw that happening with me, which is why I never got it in the first place. But
right.
I don't know if it's the online tournaments or maybe it's just that single player progression, but it really seems to have grabbed some people super hard. And it just won't let go. And that's awesome.
Yeah, but well, the whole Nintendo tournament thing that just cycle, like they just cycle through tournaments and like that keeps the online players engaged. And I wish they would do something similar with, I don't know, Mario Kart 8.
We say engaged, but I mean,
momentarily.
I mean, how engaged can you be with other people playing video game golf over the internet? You can't talk to them.
Asynchronously.
You don't play together the way you perform has zero impact on how other players perform.
Okay.
It's basically a leaderboard that gets refreshed every couple days.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Guillaume, they did just do that in Pokemon Shuffle recently.
Oh, boy.
And you get prizes.
I don't want to shatter your illusion of how awesome this online mode is, but...
No, but I just mean, like, it's nice that there's this new content constantly being refreshed.
Johnny shits on your dreams in RFN special.
Even though it's not actual new content, you know, I don't want to spoil this for you, but
you're not really playing with these other people. You're just comparing.
No, I know.
Mario's not real.
Maybe. Oh, shut up. I'm hanging out with him. It's awesome. It's my lifelong dream.
Dinosaurs can't actually fly.
Her name's not actually Daisy.
So maybe engage was the wrong word to employ, but I just, you know, it keeps you coming back to the game, so, you know.
Yeah, no, that's...
It's a good thing.
That is cool, man. That's cool. Mm. Okay, well...
Thanks, Johnny. That could not have sounded any more condescending.
Sorry, I'm so dismissive.
That's really
dismissive
cool, buddy.
Bullshit. Yeah, that's cool, man. Whatever.
Wow, look at whatever this guy. Floats your boat.
I'm so tired, and I'm trying to end the episode.
Holy shit! On that note, we're wrapping up this episode.
God, we gotta get out of here.
This whole thing's a disaster.
That must have come across badly.
That was the last RFN ever. Stay tuned next week when we don't do the show.